Welcome to London Calling, the show that tells you what's going on in Britain. I'm Graham Mack, and all the news you need to know coming up. But first of all, something I was talking about the other week. Songs with your name in them. Anna is in Warsaw, Poland, and you want to talk about this.
About a song about Anna.
Yes.
Yes. So, okay, I can say something. We have like a Polish band.
Yes.
Red guitar, who've been singing about Anna Maria.
The song is called Anna Maria.
Yes.
Is it anything like the Benny Hill song, Anna Maria? Anna Maria, you're the girl I adore. Anna Maria, you're the girl I live for. I travel the world, all land and sea, but I never find one like you, Anna Maria. Is it like that one?
Well, it sounds a little bit different because it's a Polish song.
Yeah. But this one has a great verse in it. We went to the open air theatre. One summer's night in the park. Soon I had to excuse myself, so I wandered off in the dark. I got back to my seat next to her. Hadn't been gone for more than a minute. I said, how was the show? She said, you ought to know, you stupid great fool, you were in it. It's not like that one at all then. No, okay. All right, thanks a lot. I have an experience that directly relates to one of the stories in the news this week. The list of Britain's most overcrowded trains is out. Number two on the list is the 7:55 Cambridge to London King's Cross. Capacity, 202 passengers. Actual number of passengers, 426. Well, I've been on that train. The normal rules of business don't apply to Britain's train operators, and neither do the rules of Einsteinian physics. Last year, I spoke at a radio conference in London that ran from 8:30 till 5:30. That meant I had to keep normal office hours for the day and had to join thousands of people that commute by train. In every other business, the customer who pays more gets more. And a business's most loyal customers get treated better than the occasional users. Frequent flyers on airlines get treated to air miles that give them free flights, upgrades, and access to a lounge. The opposite is true on Britain's trains. If you travel at what the rail operator has decided is a peak time, you pay a lot more, but you don't get a better seat. In fact, you probably won't get a seat at all. The people who travel at this time are going to work every day, which makes them the rail company's most loyal customers. They pay thousands of pounds every year for a season ticket. If you only occasionally travel by train and do it off-peak, you don't have to stand squashed up, cheek to jowl, with hundreds of miserable strangers in a stinking hot carriage. You might even get two seats to yourself and a table. I got on the second most crowded train in Britain at Hitchin. I paid around twice as much as I normally pay for a return to King's Cross. I had to stand for the 32-minute journey with hundreds of other people who'd paid for the most expensive ticket of the day. The accommodation my ticket provided was just inside the doorway, stood, sandwiched between a fat bloke carrying a fold-up bicycle and a tall, skinny man who was pushed so close to me that I'm sure I could tell which side he dressed. As the windows steamed up and the temperature inside the carriage began to rise, I noticed a sign that said, Great Northern Trains, follow us on Twitter. Well, I did better than that. I tweeted him. How come I pay twice as much for a peak ticket but don't get a seat? And there was a reply. Peak services are exceptionally busy, Graham. Are you able to get an earlier train to maximise your chance of getting a seat? Tina. Well, that made me even more angry. So I replied to Tina. It's not my fault. You don't put long enough trains on. How dare you blame me I paid for a seat. You failed to provide one. I didn't hear from Tina after that. Fancy asking, are you able to get an earlier train? Not now. I'm already on this one. Did I miss something? Was Tina suggesting that one of the platforms at Hitchin Railway Station is actually a portal into another dimension where I can travel backwards in time? Wouldn't have done me much good. The earlier train had been cancelled. Let's check in with Mick.
For that song, were you naming it?
Yeah.
I was unfortunately enough to start with the song at school, Mickey.
Oh.
Hi, Mickey, you're so fine. What a rubbish song that was.
But the words are good. If they're about you, you're so fine, you blow my mind. Hey, Mickey.
Yeah, but everyone, you know, the pom-poms, everyone was doing a silly little clap and every time I walked in the room.
Oh, Mickey, you're so fine. Oh, poor Mick. All right. Hey, thanks for sharing. Thanks for being man enough to share, though.
Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate that.
The UK government wants to force extremists underground and make them harder to catch. The British Home Secretary, Amber Rudd, wants real action to remove online extremist content. She's put the internet giants on notice that the British government could introduce new laws to clamp down on extremist content online. She's going after Facebook, Google, Microsoft and Twitter over terrorists' use of their platforms. Amber Rudd and the Prime Minister Theresa May have called for an end to internet safe spaces where terrorists can spread their hate. She told Sky News that she'll urge tech companies to remove extremist content from the internet. She says there could be new laws if companies don't act.
But we also want the tech companies to take action themselves to make sure that some of the material that is radicalising the terrorists never gets there in the first place.
This is scary. The government don't just want to censor the internet. They want to stop people putting things on the internet that they don't agree with. Now, no one should be inciting hatred and murder, but if they are, we should know who they are and why they're saying this. If we ban them from the internet, these people will still have these views. They just won't put them online. This won't fix the problem. It'll just hide it. What the social media companies really need to do is a better job of identifying the people that post content that could be dangerous. So why is the British government not pushing for that? Maybe the government's looking for a new way to make money from these companies by being able to fine them if someone posts something bad on their platform. Well, if the government just want to make more money from these companies, why don't they just close some of the massive loopholes that allows them to legally pay hardly any tax? Maybe it's more sinister than that. Maybe the politicians, in their lust for power, want to have more control over you. Today it's hate speech. Tomorrow it could be political speech or criticism of their government. Maybe Amber Rudd is the commandant of the thought police. Elvis died 40 years ago. Can you believe that's how long ago it was this year? Some people refuse to accept it. They think Elvis is still alive. I don't. You see, if you were going to fake your own death, which means you could come up with the story of how you died, would you choose to be the bloke known for dying on the toilet trying to pass a giant turd? English soccer clubs are missing out on revenue because of a dumb rule they agreed to more than 50 years ago. We got news this week that it's going to get harder to watch Premier League soccer matches on TV this season. You see, a lot of people have been watching games on a thing called Kodi through PCs, Xboxes, Google TV and Amazon Fire Sticks. It's estimated that as many as a third of football fans watch soccer this way, even though it's illegal. Now, if you're caught, you could have your online stream cut off. The High Court has issued a blocking order. Under this order, UK internet service providers will have to stop people from illegally streaming matches. At the moment, fans can only legally watch Premier League games if they pay for it with a Sky or BT Sport subscription. That sounds fair because Sky and BT have paid for exclusive rights. But what about the games that are not televised in Britain but are televised in other countries and pretty easy to find on the internet? I'm talking about the games that are played on Saturday afternoons. The traditional kick-off time for soccer in the UK is 3 p.m. on Saturdays, but no games are televised at that time. It's all because in the 60s, Bob Lord, the chairman of Burnley Football Club at the time, believed that allowing the broadcast of soccer at its most popular time would be detrimental to attendances at live games. He gathered together the rest of the chairmen from the Football League and persuaded them all to agree to his suggestion that soccer should not be televised between 2:45 p.m. and 5:15 p.m. So now, when a network has bought the rights to a 3 p.m. kickoff, the game is moved to a different time or a different day. The game gets skyjacked. No legal ruling has ever been put in place over this. But the Football Association, the Premier League, and the Football League have continued to abide by this stupid rule ever since. Sky and BT are worried about losing money because of illegal streams. But what if you already pay for a BT and Sky subscription, and your team is playing on Saturday at 3 p.m? If you watch an illegal stream, BT and Sky don't lose any money. You're already paying for their subscriptions, but they're not showing the match. The real losers here are the clubs, the people who started all this. They lose money because they don't have the rights to stream the 3 p.m. Saturday games on their own TV channels and websites and charge fans around the world for the privilege. What should be taxed? A list came out this week of unusual taxes, like for instance in Russia, beards used to be taxed. In Britain, we used to have a window tax. In fact, some architecture, you can see it where a window frame has been bricked up. That was to avoid paying the window tax. In Connecticut and Minnesota, services provided by tattoo parlours are taxed, and in Massachusetts and Georgia, piercings are taxed. What else should be taxed? I say the waiter that comes up to you in the middle of a meal and says, "Is everything okay?" They should be taxed. Badger, you reckon cyclists should be taxed?
Cyclists should be taxed, and I think horses as well. Anyone that rides a horse on the road should be taxed.
Okay.
As well.
All right then. Right.
But anyway,
right.
No, the one that people like, when you drive past a country pub or something, and it's got a sign outside that says good pub food, they
yes.
should be taxed.
Really?
I mean, who's going to put a sign out that says pub food? I mean, it's ridiculous, you know. I mean, okay. And when you're in the doctors, people
yes.
walk in and they go, "Hello, how are you?" You know, well, I'm ill, wouldn't I? I mean, the doctors, I mean, God, you know, they should be taxed.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And other people that say, like, "You're going on holiday this year?" You say, "Yeah, September for 2 weeks." "Oh, are you going anywhere nice?" "No, I'm going somewhere awful. I went there last year for a week. It was so bad, I'm going back for 2 weeks this year." You know? I mean, how ridiculous is that?
Kim Jong-un is a dangerous, spoilt brat with a bad attitude and a bad haircut, but according to the media in North Korea, he can do no wrong. Because he's their supreme leader. The British press is exactly the same in the way it reports news about our unelected head of state and all members of the royal family.
This week, Prince Philip retired. He's the Queen's husband. He only got the job in the first place because he married the Queen when she was Princess Elizabeth. He's a racist, a sexist, and says inappropriate things in public, but the British media describe him as a national treasure. And the things he says are gaffes. They're not gaffes. Gaffes are mistakes. Prince Philip means every word he says. This is just really poor journalism. It's fake news. Talking to some British students in China during the 1986 state visit, he said, "If you stay here much longer, you'll all end up being slitty-eyed." In 2001, when 13-year-old Andrew Adams told Prince Philip he wanted to go into space, Prince Philip told him, "You're too fat to be an astronaut." In Australia in 2002, he said to a successful Aborigine entrepreneur, "Do you still throw spears at each other?" On a visit to Bromley in Kent in May 2012, he said to a 25-year-old council worker, Hannah Jackson, "I'd get arrested if I unzipped that dress." In July 2015, he lost patience with an RAF photographer and said, "Just take the effing picture." Serena Bergman makes some good points in an article in The Independent online. She's not happy that someone with such extreme views should have been representing Britain in the 21st century. She suggests that the money wasted on the royal family could be better spent improving the National Health Service, tackling homelessness, or ending child poverty, rather than paying for palaces and private jets for unelected officials. Serena points out that Prince Philip once asked the 11 multi-ethnic members of the dance group Diversity if they were all related. He said that wind farms for renewable energy are a disgrace. He even once suggested that London should ban tourists. Yes, tourists. Tourism is most royal sycophants' only argument for keeping him and the rest of the royal family in the job in the first place. Prince Philip is not a statesman and has never acted like one. He once asked a female sea cadet if she worked in a strip club. He told the president of Nigeria, who met him in national dress, "You look like you're ready for bed." No one really cares whether Prince Philip continues to carry on his royal duties or not. Most of us don't even know what they are. It's mostly standing around near the Queen while she cuts ribbons and attends free dinners. Under the surface, the royal family are a group of parasites with a very sinister background. They have a long history of representing only the upper echelons of society and supporting a system where your surname and social pedigree dictate the opportunities available to you. Everyday people on low incomes in full-time work give part of their wages to pay for these people's birthright to free money, a palace, and a couple of castles. The royal family's existence embodies our lack of social mobility and demeans the concept of democracy. Living in a country where the head of state is unelected can get downright demoralizing. And that's not going to change just because the older ones retire and the younger ones take over. I'm glad that Prince Philip is no longer representing our country. And I'm wary of a system which ever allowed him to do the job in the first place. It's time to start phasing out the monarchy. But first, we have to reform the media. When otherwise fine, intelligent news networks get their otherwise fine, intelligent journalists to present fluff pieces about the royals, it just makes us look like North Korea. A A selfie that Buzz Aldrin took during a spacewalk went on sale this week. It wasn't from his mission to the moon. It was from Gemini 12 in 1966. Mind you, to the people who believe that America never went to the moon, it probably doesn't mean much. I still can't believe people think America never went to the moon. I mean, you've just got to look at the reason for the moon missions. It was propaganda to beat the Russians in the Cold War. Now, if anyone had the capability at the time to monitor what America was doing on the moon, it would have been the Russians. And with the Cold War being a war of propaganda, don't you think if the Russians knew America never went to the moon, the Russians would say? But the Russians have never said that America never went to the moon. The only people talking about America not going to the moon are Americans.
Should you be fined for looking at your cell phone while you're walking along? They're known as smartphone zombies. In Honolulu, pedestrians have been banned from looking at their phones while they're crossing the street. You could get a fine of up to $99. It's to reduce injuries and deaths from distracted walking. More than 11,000 cell phone zombies were injured in the United States between the year 2000 and 2011. That's according to a study from the University of Maryland. I don't know where I'm at with this one. Just because some people find it difficult to walk and chew gum at the same time, why should we all be banned from using our cell phones while we cross the road? It is just another attack on our freedom. But then I think about other safety laws, like compulsory crash helmets. Those laws took away freedom, but how many lives have been saved since those rules were brought in? Every day, governments pass laws to make us a safer society. And as they do this, we lose personal freedoms. Where is the line between where our right to choose is more important than the government's right to impose their standards on us, even if it's for our own good? Maybe there needs to be a compromise here. Maybe you should be allowed to use a mobile phone when you're crossing the street, as long as you're wearing a crash helmet. Let's check in with Ken.
People using mobile phones when they're walking.
Yeah.
They are inconvenient, but one thing I'd like to see banned is smoking in cars.
Smoking in cars altogether?
Yes.
Why is that? What if someone's on their own?
Well, majority of them just throw their cigarettes out the window anyway.
Yeah, so that's littering, yeah.
Yes, and, if you're driving a soft-top car or a motorcyclist, they come at you and it's very inconvenient and dangerous.
Yeah, but if they smoke in the car and stub it out in the car ashtray...
That's fair enough. But there again, isn't smoking and lighting a cigarette just as bad as touching a phone?
Ah, yeah. In fact, in some ways, it might be more distracting.
I think so.
Because there's more involved there. You're dealing with fire!
Well, when you light a cigarette, a match or a lighter, momentarily you're blinded.
Well, I suppose you are, yeah. But then again, so are you when you sneeze.
Well, that's natural nature, isn't it?
Yeah, unavoidable.
But, smoking is dangerous.
I totally agree with the rule. You're not allowed to smoke in a car now if there's a kid in the car, are you?
I still see people doing it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They drive into Asda car park, they've got a cigarette on, they've got a couple of kids in the back.
Yeah.
Oh, it's disgraceful.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why we still even have smoking. It's just the stupidest thing to do.
Well, they cost £9 a packet.
Is that what they cost now?
Yeah. And then would you set fire to a £10 note every day? That's what people are doing.
Yeah, but not only are they setting fire to a £10 note, they're setting fire to a £10 note and increasing their risk of being killed by this horrible thing. And
exactly.
It's not even a quick death. It's not even like you're crossing the road using a mobile phone and you get wiped out by a BMW. It's not a quick death. It's a really slow, drawn out, gasping for breath death. It's or throat cancer or yep. heart disease. No, it's not even a good way to go.
No. And it's a drain on the resources of the country.
Yeah, I wonder how shops are allowed to sell cigarettes under the suicide rules in this country. Now, we hear about this thing with this Dignitas and all the rest of it. And the reason why that exists is it's not illegal to commit suicide in this country, but it is illegal to help someone commit suicide.
Exactly.
Now, smoking, everybody knows it'll kill you. Everybody knows that. So if you smoke, that's a suicidal tendency. You're actually committing suicide, but really slowly. If you sell someone cigarettes, you're helping them commit suicide, aren't you?
Exactly.
I mean, you're not allowed to sell guns unless the person's got a license, you know, that, and the license, I'm sure, it makes sure that there are certain rules and you don't want people shooting themselves. I mean, if someone said, it went to a gun shop, it's quite legal and they had a license to own a gun and said, I'd like to buy a gun, which is the best one to use to kill myself. I'm pretty sure the gun shop owner then cannot sell that person a gun because they would be helping them commit suicide. But if someone goes to buy a packet of cigarettes, well, they're clearly committing suicide. That's what they want them for. How are we even allowed to sell them? I don't get that.
Well, it's weird, but,
yeah. Yeah, it's strange. Hey, thanks a lot, Ken.
Thank you, Grab.
Jim's on Skype from Philadelphia, and Jim, you've got the same problem as me, a 21st century problem, having to remember all the passwords for all the different things you have to log into these days.
I don't know what my Facebook password is. I think my phone knows what it is. I don't know what it is. I put it in at some point years ago.
Yeah.
I've no idea what it is.
I'm the same way. I've got everything goes through Google Drive, Google Chrome, and Chrome remembers all of the passwords for everything. So everything, just as long as I open it through Chrome, through a shortcut on Chrome, it just opens. One day I'm going to be in big trouble because I don't know any of them.
Yeah.
None of them. I mean, I got the, just, oh. I thought I had it worked out at one stage. This is a long time ago. I don't do it this way anymore. I selected a part of the body. And so then.
Yes, I remember you saying this.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah. And then I just put the, like, let's, for argument's sake, the part of the body is hand. It isn't hand, but let's just say it is.
Yeah.
If I was checking into Twitter, my password would be Twitter hand. If I was checking into Facebook, it would be Facebook hand. If it was, and that's how I did it. You know?
Yeah.
So I didn't have to remember them. But then some of them wanted numbers as well. So some of them I had to do one, or there wasn't long enough. And now I can't remember which ones have got numbers, which ones haven't. Do they start with a capital? You know, do they not?
Yeah.
You know, so it's no help. It's just more frustration because I think, no, I've got this. I've got that. No, okay, that's not it. Okay. Maybe it was number.
You had a system and then
it wouldn't,
the system's done. Sorry.
Yeah. So. No, I'm no better off now. And so Google Chrome's got them all. I have no idea what they all are.
It's the same way with phone numbers.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone's phone number.
No. No.
My phone knows it.
My phone knows it. Julie ribs me about this. I do not know Julie's mobile number. I just go to the picture of Julie's face in my menu of phone numbers and touch it and it rings
up. It's not even her name.
Not even her name.
It's a picture.
Not even her name. Could you imagine what we call directory inquiries, what you call information? If anybody still used that, how difficult it would be. Yes, I'm after the number for a bloke with a crew cut and he's got a tattoo on his, you know, it'd be like, you'd have to describe them to them.
A bit of a smirk, I guess you'd call it. It's not exactly a smile, but it's one of those faces.
Yeah.
Do you have, what's his number?
Yeah.
Do you have it?
Yeah. And some people I don't, let me have a quick look. Some people I don't even have
faces for. I have things to remind me of who they are. Let me just have a look.
Ah, yeah. I'm looking for the number of a mate of mine. In the picture, he's giving me a rude gesture.
Yeah.
So do you have that? What's his number?
Yeah. I'm just trying to think. Yeah, I've got one. It's a picture of Elvis, because the fellow reminded me of Elvis. He looks nothing like Elvis.
You know that guy that looks like Elvis? He's not Elvis, obviously. I know what Elvis' phone number. It would do me no good. But he looks like him.
Yeah.
Do you?
I've got Dirk, who is Australian. But he's from Tasmania. There's an actual picture of a map of Tasmania. You know, could you imagine information trying to give me that number? And be like,
you know, the Tasmanian guy.
Yeah, yeah. There's loads of, so, I don't know. I think we're all in big trouble one day when the computers rise up against us and they have all our passwords for everything. We're in big trouble. And don't get me started on Siri. Do you use Siri?
I don't. Once in a while, I'll say, you know, open up this app if I'm just feeling really lazy. Otherwise, I just don't use it.
Yeah. It's, hang on. Let me plug my phone in. Let me see if this will do this. So let me just, Hey Siri, how much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
Where I'm from, they say, how many parsecs could a particular person parse if a person could parse particular parsecs?
ask her to divide zero by zero.
Okay. Hey Siri, divide zero by zero.
Imagine that you have zero cookies and you split them evenly among zero friends. How many cookies does each person get? See, it doesn't make sense. And Cookie Monster is sad that there are no cookies. And you are sad that you have no friends.
What is that all about? What I do with it is I use it for texting. If I get a text on my phone, I'll go, hey Siri, read text. So let me just try this. Hey Siri, read text.
There aren't any unread messages.
Okay, there aren't any. But if there's one from Julie, she reads it like literally. Like, you know, Julie uses a lot of the emojis on the end. So she'll read the message and then she'll go, red heart, red heart, red heart, stinking pile of dog poo. I mean, she describes what each emoji is in words.
Oh, that's great.
So then I text back. And like last week, I was just arriving at Radio Merseyside, and I park in the car park across the road, which is called Q Park. It's the name of the building, and it's the company that runs it. So Julie texted me something, how's it going? Did you get there on time kind of thing? So Siri reads that to me. So I said, because I want to be hands-free. I don't want to touch the phone. I'm driving, right? So I said, yeah. Just arriving at Q Park now. So she goes, would you like me to send it? And I go, yeah. And then Julie texts me back and goes, I don't get your last text. You're just arriving at Tupac? Yeah, and she never gets the texts right. She cannot understand me. And it's just hilarious. Using Siri for text, what I would love to do, and I don't know how you do it, because I've tried asking her, but I've always got a book on the go. I'm reading this. It's a terrible Richard Lewis book. But could I get her to read me the book? Could I turn any Kindle or iPhone?
Oh, and any sort of text-to-speech?
Yeah, could she read the thing to me? Because that might be useful in the car when there's nothing on the radio. She just reads me my book. Can that be done? In theory, she reads texts from Julie, so she can read text. And I do have ebooks down, certainly she should be able to read the Apple ones because it should all be, the interface should be there. But I can't work out how to make that happen. If you know anyone who knows how to do that, I'll just,
Hey Siri, read iBook.
Okay, here's iBooks.
Now she's opening up iBooks.
Yeah.
I think. Now it's crashed. It's literally crashed. Oh no, she's open. Oh no, she's. Oh no, she has opened it now. But she's not opened it on the book I'm on. So have I got a Richard Lewis's book, which is called The Great Depression? Right, so it's opening the book. So I've got a page here, right? Hey Siri, read The Great Depression, Richard Lewis.
Okay, I found this on the web for Read The Great Depression, Richard Lewis.
See, she's just looking for stuff on the web. Maybe if I try this. Hey Siri, read screen.
There's nothing to read.
Okay. But it is. I just put the... Okay. I don't know how to make it do that. I think that would be a handy feature. But then again, they mightn't let that happen because it might just take the talking books business away.
I was going to say, it put some voice actors out of business.
Yeah, wouldn't it? It would put some voice actors out of business. I mean, she wouldn't read it as well as a voice actor. But
it would put Audible out of business.
Yeah. Oh, well, maybe I should just shut up. Because you have to buy the audiobook as a separate thing. You buy it. But I bet the technology is, I bet it's possible with just a few tweaks because she does read, she can read texts. Why couldn't she read from a book? That's a scary thought, isn't it?
Well, just have Julie text you. Every paragraph of the audiobook.
Just to transcribe it. She could just sit at home transcribing.
Copy paste
would work, wouldn't it? Oh, it'd take a long time. Oh, well. It's just something I was, you know, I spend 8 hours on the road every Saturday.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's every Sunday. Because what I do now is, I've done it a couple of weeks now, is I get up at 3 o'clock. Leave the house at 3:30, drive to Liverpool, arrive there around 7. So not quite 4 hours each way, but I arrive there about 7. And then I set off again at noon and head back. Coming back takes like 4.5 hours. Yeah, it does, it's 8 hours. It's like 3.5 on the way up because no traffic and then 4.5 on the way back. And I just run out of podcasts. Yeah. Yeah, so I just thought...
Yeah, by the end of next year, you could have read the entire English canon.
Yes.
If you had everything on audiobook.
Yeah, yeah. I could pretty much read the entire internet. Hi to Jane in San Francisco, who sent me a nice email, and she says, "Dear Graham, I've always been wondering, which is faster, the speed of light... or the speed of dark?" Interesting scientific question, this. Well, the answer is easy. The speed of light is much faster than the speed of dark. In fact, dark travels very slowly indeed. This is because light travels in straight lines. Dark doesn't tend to do that, mainly because it can't see where it's going. Watch your guilty pleasure. A survey came out this week with the top 50 guilty pleasures of British people. Here's the top five. Number five, watching Netflix or catch-up TV films back-to-back all day. Number four, falling asleep in front of the television or at the cinema. Number three, watching Disney films and cartoons as an adult. Number two, ordering takeaway because you can't be bothered to cook. But Britain's number one guilty pleasure: having an extra scoop of ice cream or a slice of cake. Jane, what's your guilty pleasure?
Cheese on my chips.
Cheese on chips?
Yeah.
Melted on?
Yeah.
So what do? You grate it on and microwave it?
Or grill it. Microwave it makes the chips go soggy.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know. All right, so.
It's horrendous. And if you're trying to lose weight, it's beyond a sin.
Yeah, because, let's see, chips are mostly fat. They are deep fried in fat, making them absorb fat. Yeah, all right, they're mostly potato, but they're deep fried in fat. They are soaked in fat. So you've got chips, they're full of fat. And what are you drizzling on them?
Fat!
Fat! Cheese is fat! I want more fat with my fat. Would you like more fat with your fat?
Yeah, go on then. But you've got to have vinegar on your chips.
Of course you do.
Cuts through the fat, so then it's
alright. Is that what the vinegar does? I did not know that.
It completely negates.
I did not know that. Right, I see. So that helps with the guilty pleasure problem.
Yeah, absolutely. It atones for all your sins, does the vinegar.
That's why biscuits as well. If you break them in half, that causes all the calories to leak out.
They fall out.
Yes, and if you dunk them in tea, then all the calories and all the fat and all the sugar and everything, they all just completely disappear into the tea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, my argument's flawed.
Mm-hmm.
I am on a diet.
Are you?
So it obviously doesn't work, putting the vinegar on.
How is the diet going then?
It has good days and bad days. Mostly it's bad days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which means I haven't actually lost a huge amount of weight. I start off brilliant intentions.
Yes.
Brilliant. I'm not going to eat anything today. I'm going to walk 15 miles. I'm going to wear a horse hair shirt. And I'll be 7.5 stone by Tuesday.
Yes.
But by the evening, I'm thinking, well, I might as well have a biscuit with my cup of tea. Just one biscuit.
So all of your guilty pleasures are food related?
All the ones I wish to discuss.
Okay, Jane. All right, thank you very much. Cheers.
Have a lovely day.
And you too.
This is London Calling.
That's it for this one. More next time. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm @GrahamMac. If you want to hear more Mac Nuggets, check out my website, macmedia.co.uk, and subscribe to my Bob FM show on Apple Podcasts. Got a question or something to say? Send me an email. If you put your phone number in the email, I might call you back or Skype you on the show. My email address is graham@macmedia.co.uk, and you spell Graham like the cracker, Mac like the truck. Till next time, ta-da.